following is from Friday, June 10th, 2016.
I'm honored to welcome Dr. Hussein Rashid to our pulpit tonight. And this is actually not Dr. Rashid's first time at Temple Emmanuel. Hussein, his wife Shazma, and their children Saif Al-Aziz and Sitara Noor have attended our family Shabbat Kodesh service with their friends in our congregation. Dr. Rashid is an academic, speaker, and educator about Muslim life in America. Dr. Rashid holds a bachelor's degree from Columbia and a PhD from Harvard. He has taught at Fordham, Virginia Theological Seminary, the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College, Barnard College, and other institutions. Dr. Rashid is also the founder of Islamicate, a consultancy focusing on religious literacy and cultural competency. He is a term member on the Council of Foreign Relations and a fellow at the Institute for Social Policy and Understanding, the Ariane de Rothschild Fellowship in Social Entrepreneurship, the American Muslim Civic Leadership Institute, and the Truman National Security Project. Dr. Rashid sits on the editorial boards of Religion Dispatches, the Islamic Monthly, and Cyber Orient, in addition to being a contributing scholar to State of Formation. His work has appeared on CNN, Al Jazeera America, and in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Religion News Service. Born and raised in New York, Dr. Rashid currently serves as the content expert at the Children's Museum of Manhattan for the America to Zanzibar exhibit, which explores Muslim cultures near and far. Hussein has become a friend and advisor to our congregation as we have expanded our Muslim-Jewish dialogue. Building on Temple Emmanuel's legacy as a leader in multi-faith work, as Rabbi Davidson mentioned, this year we launched a Muslim-Jewish dialogue through our Saviv program for people in their 20s and 30s. Some of our programs included a living museum experience, where young Muslims and Jews toured this sanctuary and the mosque on 96th Street. This spring, we conducted a Passover Seder at the Islamic Center on 55th Street, allowing temple members to celebrate the Seder with their Muslim friends. And in the fall, we look forward to visiting the Children's Museum with young families from our community and Muslim families. Following services tonight, as you know, for the second year, we look forward to hosting an iftar dinner with the Muslim Alumni Association of Cornell. And on June 23rd, all are invited to join us for another iftar dinner here at Temple Emmanuel to celebrate Ramadan with our friends at the Muslim-Jewish Solidarity Committee. We look forward to continuing to grow our dialogue program and strengthening our bonds of friendship in the American Muslim community. We thank Dr. Rashid for his guidance, and we look forward to learning from him tonight. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Hussein Rashid.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may God's peace, mercy, and blessings be with you. And Shabbat shalom. For Muslims, this is the month of Ramadan. It's a time to be thankful. And I want to begin by thanking Rabbi Davidson and Rabbi Tikbro for inviting me to share this evening with you and to all of you for opening your doors and having me here today. So thank you for that. And so it is Ramadan. It is a month where Muslims do not eat from sunrise to sunset. And in answer to my favorite question, no, not even water. And we do this because God tells us to do so in the Quran, our scripture. And it's one of those things that God says, and you do it. And it's a time for purification, reflection, transformation, and a renewed intent to charitable giving. However, this month is also blessed because it is the month in which the Quran was first revealed to the Prophet Muhammad. May God grant he and his family peace. The revelation of the entire text took over 23 years, But the first revelation came during this month, when the prophet was 40 years old. During Ramadan, it is traditional for Muslims to read a portion of the Quran, a 30th of the Quran, every night of the month. And coincidentally, today's portion includes a verse that reminds us as Muslims that God sent the Torah as a guidance and a light to the people of Israel. Since childhood, the prophet would climb to a cave near Mecca, would climb to a cave in a mountain near Mecca called Mount Hira, or the Mountain of Light, and there he would pray until finally the first revelation would come. Iqra, iqra ba ismi rabbaka. Read in the name of your Lord. Read in the name of your Lord who created humanity from a clot of blood. Read, your Lord is most generous, who taught by the pen, taught humanity what it did not know. Indeed, people become rebellious when they consider themselves without need. When the prophet first received this revelation, he was fearful. He'd spoken to God for years, but did not expect such a forceful response. Not only was he getting an answer through the angel Gabriel, but he was receiving a revelation. The prophet's earliest biographers tell us that he doubted what was happening. He doubted that he was sane, and he ran home to his beloved wife, Khadija, peace be upon her. She listened, and she told him that he was communicating with an angel. She convinced him that he was receiving revelation and that he was being called to prophethood. And the story tells us the importance of radical listening, the art of stopping, clearing our mind, and engaging what is around us. The prophet may not have expected a response, but he listened for one. He disciplined himself to be open to the possibility of a profound contact. When he is unsure of what that connection means, he is making the most intimate and primordial connection possible with the divine, he runs to his wife. Few in Mecca would have been willing to listen to him. As he was coming down from the mountain, they had their idols of wood, their idols of myrrh, and their idols of gold. But Khadija listens to him. She acknowledges his distress, she comforts him, and ultimately, she helps him to accept his calling. She too is listening, and that listening generates empathy, the ability to feel with another person and accept their struggles without inserting yourself into those struggles. And the revelation that the prophet receives says that we as human beings become rebellious when we think we have no need. When we think we have no need, we claim the mantle of the divine. It is our pride and our hubris that keeps us from acknowledging God. In the Quran, it is one of the prime sins of Pharaoh to think he needs nothing, not even God. It is in humbling ourselves by recognizing God's majesty that we can open ourselves to a deep, radical empathy and truly build community. Unfortunately, as we see today, that sort of orientation is scary to so many people. The fact that we should be dependent on other people should be self-evident. Yet it is still something that has to be intentional, that we have to cultivate. I grew up in New York City, in a place called Forest Hills in Queens, for those of you who know it. It was a multi-ethnic, multi-religious area, where we didn't really talk about race or religion. If you remember that New York of a generation ago, our personal safety was not as strong as it was today. And let's leave that as a euphemism. We made friends to take care of ourselves. We were in need, and that forged a community. Now I am in a New York that is the safest it has been in my entire life, and I travel more in it to neighborhoods I didn't before, but it's harder for me to know people. I don't want to go back to that New York where I'd be afraid. But we need to think about how we cultivate the need to listen to one another, to say we are New Yorkers, and that's what ties us together. And pluralism is a word, it's a word I know now, but I didn't know then. It's a word that means more than diversity, which is number counting. In a city as diverse as New York, why do I still go to panels where we struggle to find a woman who represents half of the world's population to sit with us? When I go to a panel and say, hey, you're the Asian. Great, my parents migrated from Africa, am I still Asian? Oh, you can be our African American. Seriously, please look. It's this idea that one third of the world's population is somehow, as an Asian, needs to be represented because it's too hard to find one in three of the world's population to sit on a panel. So diversity is number counting, but pluralism is something more. The increase in the wealth in this city has not been equal. It's pushed out longtime residents and privileged certain industries. And our diversity is weaker, which means so is our pluralism, which is living with that diversity. Because when we don't have diversity, how do we learn to live with it? How do we learn to live with each other? And I miss that pluralistic city. When I think about what I want, it's that pluralism back again. Our new wealth and our new security also lulls us into a false sense of confidence and surety. History continually repeats itself. And today we have new pharaohs, those who think human perfection is possible and makes them able to replace the divine. And in this false perfection, we think we no longer have need of God or of each other. At a micro level, this means we tend to create our own areas of dominance by creating a sense of artificial scarcity. We tend to think of the world in terms we can comprehend. The things and goods that I have are limited, so we must compete for them. Yet, by recognizing God's majesty, the important things in life are limitless. To help someone else should not be about what I lose, but about what the other person gains. The New York I grew up in was one where we needed people and used things. But this New York today, where my children are growing up in, I fear that they will learn to need things and use people. Perhaps we are in need, but for something else. A radical empathy that allows us to see the needs of the other and understands our own needs more. In the Quran, God says that we are created tribes and nations that we may know one another. And the purpose of knowing each other is to recognize the power and glory of God through creation. It may be through other people or simply through the blooming of the flowers. And it is through our differences that we can marvel at the infinite power and creativity of the Creator. I talked about Forest Hills before. And at the time I was there, it was a multi-faith environment. So it was and remains a beautiful neighborhood. But there was a strong Jewish presence. I knew Hanukkah before I knew Christmas. I still have the dreidel my best friend in grade school gave to me. And it was a really diverse Jewish community in ways that I didn't appreciate at the time. And it included several movements and different ethnicities. And when I think about how I study Islam and understand what it means to be Muslim in the city with the most diverse Muslim population in the world, which is New York City, the only city that comes as close to being as diverse as New York City in terms of its Muslim population is Mecca during the once-a-year pilgrimage called the Hajj. But year-round, New York is the most diverse Muslim city in the world. And the way I make sense of that is about through the lens of growing up in Forest Hills at the time. And it is through learning, engaging with people who are different from us, that we learn about ourselves the most. And I want that part of the city that I love back again. I want us to build relationships and community with one another. But I also recognize we have an obligation beyond ourselves, a moral calling and a moral imperative, because history repeats itself. I want to take a moment just as a quick aside. This week, the American Muslim community lost one of its great heroes. And America lost one of its great heroes, Muhammad Ali. May God rest his soul. And today was his interfaith memorial service. And I was listening this afternoon, and I heard Rabbi Michael Lerner offering his comments. And he said quite a bit. I'm not going to get into deep detail about. But he said two things. He said that if you want to remember Muhammad Ali, be like Muhammad Ali. And this really resonated, because as a Muslim, we want to remember our prophet by trying to be like our prophet. Not Muhammad Ali, Muhammad, the prophet. But that there was an automatic resonance that he understood that he was speaking about an American Muslim hero, and that the idea that we have our own heroes in our own communities, we strive to be like, we want to be like, not in their repetition of their actions always, but in the moral aspirations and inspirations that they give us. The other thing Rabbi Lerner did today was after he said the name of the Prophet Muhammad, he gave the salawat, the traditional blessing after Muhammad's name. May God be pleased with he and his family. And in this environment, as a Muslim today, to know that there was somebody of his stature at an event of this stature who recognized who I was as a human being was the most profound and powerful thing that could have happened to me today. To know that there is one person out there who says that I will not give in to this rhetoric, who says that I am here for you, and that there is something beyond this hate that we can strive for and aim for. And so we learn most from others. And he reminded me as well, his other comments, about this broader moral commandment and this broader moral concern that we have. And I want to take just 30 seconds to talk about today's refugee crisis. Because too often we hear the debate in terms of what it will cost us, and we don't think enough in terms of what price has already been paid. And we have seen this story before because history repeats itself. And I fear we will see it again in another generation because we find it so difficult to learn our lessons. And the cost that people on boats and planes have paid is not enough for some of us. We demand more as though we are the ones in need. And this is a difficult time. Because I think if I go back to that New York where we recognized each other in need, this debate would be very different. And that's what I want to ask for. Robert Frost says, good fences make good neighbors. But we forget that he is criticizing the notion of the fence in the first place. We can be good neighbors, or we can be a good community in relationship with one another. What has happened is that the tribes and nations that God created have built such strong, tall fences that we can no longer engage with one another. Every time we say that we will not accept someone, that we will lose by helping, that we can be good neighbors, we deny the favors of our Lord. The prophet listened to get the most transformative moment of his life. Perhaps then it is the least we can do as well. Listen. Maybe then we can build our empathy. Maybe then we can be more than neighbors. And we can maybe build community once more. I thank God for any good that I have said, and I seek forgiveness for any harm. Thank you.